but an unstated restriction, and one that could be potentially frustrating. He would be watching her progress. Granted, it was fairly reasonable for him to make sure she was escorted while she was rifling through his possessions, especially since, embarrassingly enough, he already knew that she had confiscated Donovan's ring. He also appeared to have protective wards, and his presence might be necessary to deactivate them. All in all, it wasn't ideal, but she couldn't see a way to avoid letting him follow her around while she investigated the tower. It was going to be a long day. Chapter 12. Talion 3. There are always more assassins. Second Lieutenant Banks was standing outside the briefing room when Talion arrived.
"You're almost late."
She leaned forward slightly as she spoke, lending an extra edge to her monotone voice. Talion paused in his step and saluted.
"Yes, ma'am. Sorry, ma'am."
He had taken an extra few minutes to prepare his equipment, but he was relatively certain he had arrived at least 10 minutes before he had been instructed to. He knew that arriving earlier might have given him more of a chance to gather information about the test, but he felt that being better supplied would be even more important. His message had implied that he was about to be sent on a mission immediately, so he had packed for potentially leaving the city. That meant food supplies, water, and miscellaneous camping equipment. Fortunately, he had most of those supplies readily available in his storage chest. He simply needed to organize them and throw them into a backpack. The lieutenant crisply returned his salute, allowing Talion to lower his own hand.
"Since time is short, I will be brief. You will be participating in another simulation. Is that the reproduction sword we gave you?"
She pointed at the Sakess, which was sitting on his right hip. He had the red-bladed sword sheathed on his left side.
"No, ma'am. I wasn't told this would be another simulation."
"You should be more prepared next time. I do see you have another weapon. You'll have to use that if you engage in any combat. The real Sakess is simply too dangerous."
"Yes, ma'am."
Lieutenant Banks slowly approached him, looking him up and down.
"Tuck your shirt into your pants properly."
"Yes, ma'am."
Talion adjusted his uniform. He had checked it relatively carefully before coming here. Uniform inspections had been a daily affair when he trained with the Thorn Guard, and he had expected similar from the Paladins. Thus far, they had generally proven to be much more lax, and this was no exception. If his uniform had been misaligned during Thorn Guard training, he would have been running laps at a minimum and possibly assigned to some kind of disciplinary responsibility. This was, of course, almost unavoidable. An instructor could always find something wrong if they wanted to. Lieutenant Banks seemed to want that kind of discipline, but she either lacked the rank or the will to enforce it to the same standards that the Thorn Guard had. Perhaps the Paladins, who had been promoted from squire status, had been subjected to more rigorous training. Or maybe the Coroner branch was simply more traditional than others. Talion didn't have the necessary context to say.
"Better. I'm going to place a protective ward on you. Once that's been done, you can enter the room and begin the test."
"She's not going to ask if I have any questions? Should I be asking questions?"
"Yes, ma'am," he replied out of habit, more than any sort of conscious decision. Lieutenant Banks laid a hand on Talion's arm.
"Dominion of Protection, form a layer of armor around applicant Solaris."
He felt a slight tingle as a translucent field manifested around his body. He knew from experience that the armor spell would dampen the impact of attacks, much like real armor, rather than stopping attacks entirely like Lydia's shield spells. The advantage of the armor spell was that it didn't buckle as easily from impacts, potentially making it more efficient for a longer-term fight. So either I could be involved in some heavy combat here, or they just want me to feel it if I actually get hit by someone. Interesting. Banks stepped back to the door and knocked 3 times.
"Hey, stop right there!"
The voice was unmistakable, just as unmistakable as the ring of steel that followed immediately thereafter. Velis was inside and engaged in battle.
"You may begin,"
Banks said, but Talion was already moving. The red-bladed sword was already in his right hand as he put his left on the door's handle. As he swung the door open, Talion saw Velus falling backward. She was too far for him to reach her before she hit the floor, her sword flying from her grip. Her attacker turned to glance at him for an instant as the door opened, a paladin's longsword in his hand. He or she was wearing a mask, but Talion wasn't concerned about that. Chain. One of the first things Talion had tested on the red-bladed sword was his own metal sorcery. Since it appeared to absorb some amount of other forms of sorcery, he wasn't sure if attempting to reshape it would be possible. It turned out to be easier. Rather than having to hammer a steel plate into a different shape, it was like bending metal that was still hot from the forge. The red metal was easily malleable, which meant that tricks that normally took significant effort, like this one, required little more than a casual flick of a thought. He swung the sword even as the blade reshaped itself, thinning and lengthening, the edges rounding into links. The would-be assassin raised his weapon to block, but that just gave Talion another vector to manipulate. The chain's momentum carried it just once around the target's body, but that was enough to make it briefly intersect with itself, and that was all he needed. Stick, Talion commanded, pushing his will into the spots where the chain met itself and his opponent's blade. The metal merged together, forming a lasso of steel, and he pulled hard. The assassin planted his feet, bracing both hands on the hilt of his sword to resist the strain of the pull. Velus, still on the floor, sighed and swept the assassin's right leg. The assassin slipped. Talion pulled, and the white-masked figure came soaring toward him. Talion grinned and punched the incoming assassin in the face. A blue barrier flickered into place and visibly cracked as Talion's fist smashed into it. The mask beneath it cracked in a similar pattern. The assassin staggered, falling backward from the punch, but recovered quickly. Abandoning the sword hilt, he ducked out from the loop of the sword chain and drew a knife from within his cloak, turning to rush back toward Velus. Talion wasn't having any of that. He jumped on top of the assassin, slamming him into the floor. An errant elbow glanced across the barrier in front of his chin, but the impact would have been negligible even without the barrier spell. "You're going to want to surrender now," Talion noted, trying to find and secure the assassin's weapon. The masked figure seemed freakishly agile, however, and somehow managed to duck out of his cloak and flip over, swinging his knife at Talion's throat. Talion raised his left arm and blocked the cut, drawing a flicker from the barrier in response, and then punched the assassin in the face again. The force of the blow slammed the masked figure's head into the floor, and he went momentarily still, dagger slipping through his fingers. "You okay, Velus?" Talion yelled louder than was strictly necessary, still looking at the assassin.
I'm just feeling a little lightheaded. I think I'm just going to lie here for a minute."
Lightheaded? That's not a good sign. Talion shifted his position on his downed opponent, reaching out with his left hand to smack the hilt of the dagger, sending it several feet out of the way. With that threat eliminated, he pulled his sword chain closer and began to loop it back over his downed enemy.
"Hang in there, Velus. Be with you in a moment."
A single loop clearly hadn't been sufficient. "Extend." Talion lengthened the chain, wrapping it underneath the assassin's elbows and between his legs. Finally, he bunched a section together over the assassin's chest. Fuse. The target was thoroughly wrapped now, somewhat reminding him of how he had been imprisoned in his first encounter with Lydia, although his captors had chained him in a much more mundane fashion. It occurred to him that spreading the chain so thin could make it malleable enough to break if the assassin was sufficiently strong, but he had tested the limits of a chain of similar dimensions before, and it had proved fairly resilient. He probably could have broken it himself, even without metal sorcery, but he had always been unusually adept at breaking things.
"Hey, assassin! You awake?"
The target groaned, indicating at least some degree of consciousness.
Talion, not to alarm you, but my head is getting kind of swimmy."
Talion stood up, still holding the handle of his sword as a method of controlling his chained enemy. He walked closer to Velus, dragging the assassin along the floor, carefully avoiding putting the man anywhere near where Velus or the assassin had dropped their weapons. Now that he was closer, Talion could easily see that Velis had a long gash across her right arm. That explained why she had dropped her sword, but he doubted that it was why she was feeling so light-headed. It was a long cut, but not particularly deep, and she didn't seem to be the type to faint at the sight of her own blood.
"How's your arm feel?"
He knelt down beside her, glancing back at the assassin who was just barely beginning to try to free himself from the chains.
"Cold. I feel very cold, Sal."
"Okay, stay with me. You've always been better with this medical stuff, and I might need you to talk me through helping you." Velis frowned.
"I'm not sure I can."
Her eyes fluttered, and she took a deep breath. Talion slapped her, triggering flickering barrier sparks. Her eyes widened with shock, and she shuddered slightly.
"What was that for?"
"You were losing consciousness. Don't do that."
"I was just closing my eyes for..."
"No, I need you focused. I think you're poisoned. I'm bad at poisons. You're not."
"I'm so tired, Sal. I don't think I can..."
Talion grit his teeth. "Just don't fall asleep. I'm going to get help."
"That sounds nice."
Talion turned back to the assassin, who seemed to have recovered sufficiently to start wriggling his way out of the chains. The swordsman snarled and yanked on the sword's handle, pulling the assassin close enough for Talion to kick him in the ribs. "So, you poisoned my friend. I'm not very pleased about that. This would be a good time for you to start talking."
"Death to the followers of the false gods! Death to any who oppose the Preserver!"
Talion raised an eyebrow. "Really? My villain in this scenario is some kind of cultist of Valian? Or maybe not a cultist. Black cloak, scary mask, poison. Is he supposed to be a Blackstone?" Talion knelt down and grabbed the assassin by the shoulders, flipping him over. The cloak had been left behind on the floor nearby, leaving the assassin wearing a simple black tunic and pants. Talion grabbed the collar of the shirt and pulled it down, revealing a tattoo of a black sphere surrounded by three markings. The Rethri symbols for Thorn, Iron, and Loyalty. "Well, at least they got the marks right, even if you never see someone of this kind of rank in the field." "A Blackstone Harbinger, huh? Awful sloppy for someone of your stature. I would have expected better."
"Shut up!"
The assassin squirmed, but Talion put a knee on his chest. "Anyway, if you're a Blackstone, you're carrying the antidote for your own poisons. Standard procedure. Just tell me where it is, and I'll make sure we're lenient during the trial." The assassin made a scoffing noise.
"You think I care about your perverted justice? There is only one true arbiter of justice, and his name is Jace—"
"Yes, yes, Jacinth. Everyone fears the Blackstone assassin. Okay, stay there a second." Talion shoved the assassin hard into the floor, standing back up. He walked to where the assassin had dropped his weapon, dragging the assassin along the floor as he did, and picked up the fallen weapon with his left hand. There was blood on the blade, presumably Velis's blood. The fight had presumably only gone on for moments before he arrived, so Talion doubted the assassin had hit her with any other weapons. That meant this one was, in all likelihood, the poisoned one. There was only a faint hint of a green sheen on the edge. Most of it was obscured by the blood. Like many of the most effective poisons, only a tiny amount of this poison was likely necessary for the effect. Talion sat down on the assassin's back, and with the utmost care ran the poisoned sword across the Blackstone's leg. "Okay, then, just a leg wound for now. Even if the poison is really bad, which it probably is, your antidote can probably cover a leg wound."
"You couldn't have! A paladin wouldn't—"
"You know, I'm not actually a paladin just yet, and I'm really not feeling all that paladin-like at the moment, truth be told. More like one of the Thorn Guard, who, you know, trained me for several years. Believe me, this only scratches the surface on interrogation techniques. If my friend stops breathing, you're in for quite an education."
"The pouch on my belt, on the left side. There should be enough for both of us,"
the assassin hissed.
"You should know that you did not break me. This is a practical measure. The initiate was not my true target."
"I'd love to hear more about that in a moment." Talion used his left hand, still holding the assassin's sword, to keep the assassin pushed to the floor while he looked for the belt pouch. The assassin had more than one of them, as well as a couple more daggers sheathed on his sides. Talion set down the hilt of his sword chain, drew the daggers, and casually tossed them across the room, and then found the appropriate pouch and removed a vial of fluid. The liquid inside was a murky green, not unlike the fluid Talion had seen on the blade. Talion frowned, briefly lifting the sword back up to smell the edge. The stench of blood was too strong to get much of a scent, but he nevertheless lowered the blade and unstoppered the vial, smelling it to compare. "Not really sure I trust that this is the antidote, so I'm going to test it on you first. I'm sure half a vial of poison in your wound will kill you faster than Velis is dying over there, so if this is poison, you'd probably want to tell me now." The assassin was silent for several moments, so Talion began to pour the liquid onto the assassin's leg. As soon as the fluid hit the assassin's leg, he began to squirm, but Talion continued to pour.
"Wait! No, stop! That's Scythus viper venom! I was lying before. I didn't think you'd go through with it. I don't want to die."
"The real antidote. Talk."
"It's in my right boot."
"Last chance to be honest here. You play me again, I'm just going to cut your throat and call for a healer for my friend."
I understand. The antidote, please. Get me first. You use so much of the venom, I won't have much time."
Talion stoppered the vial and carefully set it on the floor and rolled it across the room. He didn't like the idea of breaking the vial, but most poisons that the Black Stones used weren't dangerous unless they got into the bloodstream, which was what he had been counting on when he poured some of it out. He removed the assassin's boot, found the vial of blue fluid within, and patted the assassin on the head. "You just stay there. Behave, and I'll be back for you." Velis was shivering on the floor, her eyes closed. Talion pulled the stopper out of the vial and sniffed at it. "Smells like maybe a Dennis root? I've never been good at antidotes. It doesn't smell like poison, at least, and I'm pretty sure he's out of decoys." He began to pour the blue liquid onto Velis's wound. White bubbles formed on contact, making a sizzling noise, and Velis began to shudder. Talion stoppered the vial, set it on the floor, and put a hand under her head to hold her through her convulsions. After several moments, she settled into what looked like a more peaceful sleep.
"Help me," the assassin mumbled. "I don't want to die."
"I'll be back. Just give me a moment." Talion shook his head. He glanced over Velis's seemingly unconscious body for any further injuries, but he didn't see any. He was tempted to wake her again, but he wasn't sure if that was the wisest idea, or if it would even work.
"Resh, she's so much better at this triage stuff than I am. Wish she could talk me through it."
Talion slipped the blue vial into his backpack and walked back over to the assassin, who was whimpering on the floor. He leaned down and kicked the assassin's sword out of the way, then grabbed the handle of the sword chain.
"We're going to go for a walk now." "But my leg! I'm going to die! You promised!"
Talion shook his head. "First off, I never promised I'd give you the antidote, but you can relax anyway. I never even cut you."
"What?"
Talion rolled the assassin over, then pushed him to a seated position. The assassin hesitantly lifted his leg. The pant leg had been split apart and drenched with poison, but the leg beneath was unscathed. "I just put enough pressure on the blade to cut through the cloth. I knew you'd feel that and just assumed that I was cutting through flesh, too. It's often hard to feel a wound when a sword is razor sharp, and the mind plays all sorts of tricks when you can't actually see what's happening." The assassin lowered his head, silent for several moments, and then he burst into laughter.
You never even..."
"Nope. Never cut you. Wouldn't risk losing whatever information you have, even if you hurt my friend. I need to know who sent you, and who your real target was if it wasn't Velis. So you're going to come with me." The assassin laughed again, slowly rising to his feet as Talion pulled on the chain.
"You're serving the wrong masters. That game you played. You should have been one of us."
"No," Talion shook his head. "But I almost was." Hours later, Talion and Velis sat atop Kalar's Vista, a rocky hill on the northern side of the Paladin base. It was the highest place they knew of on the grounds, as far from oversight as they could be without violating the rules of their tests. They dangled their feet over the edge of a rocky cleft overlooking the base, watching the shadows spread as the dawnfire retreated below the horizon.
"So,"
Talion turned his head slightly toward Velis. How do you think I did? She turned sideways to face him directly, smirking.
I think you should have taken off my pants.
Talion blinked, recoiling slightly. What? Velis laughed, a sincere laugh that brought an unconscious smile to Talion's face.
You're so easy to bait.
She patted the lower half of her left leg.
You didn't check me for other wounds. I was supposed to have another wound on my leg. Just from a kick, fortunately. When I had my test, Landon had a cut on his leg, which was a lot worse. My neck was also supposed to be injured from the fall, but honestly, I doubt very many people would have checked that.
Talion lowered his head. Do you think I've failed?
Don't think so, but they're definitely going to hit you for not checking me carefully enough. Next time, make sure to give me a thorough examination, yeah?
He chuckled. You're shameless. But thanks for the honest answer, even if it does make me nervous.
Relax. You got the bad guy.
I was impressed. I let mine get away. I thought that was the point, picking saving your friend over taking the assassin down.
Now I'm not so sure.
If they use Landon as the victim for her, and her for me, that might mean that they were trying to compromise our judgment. Or, like she assumed, maybe the opposite, trying to ensure that we did the right thing and prioritized our friend. Paladins of Taos are supposed to prioritize saving lives over all else, after all.
I left you behind. He turned away from her.
Cheer the Resh up! You're so moody sometimes!
She slid closer to him on the rocks, putting a hand on his shoulder.
It was just a test, Sal.
He frowned, turning his gaze back toward her. Sure, but it might have been indicative of our personalities. I think that's the point. I went straight for the attack. Sure, I faked poisoning the guy, but I still won't claim that I was thinking clearly. I wanted to hurt him. I knew none of it was real, but my instincts were screaming at me to hurt him, to break the person who hurt you.
Well, I find that flattering personally. That means you really wanted to protect me.
She slid her hand down his arm, grabbing his own hand.
And if you feel bad about leaving me behind, just don't do it again, yeah?
Protecting you. Is that what it was about?
I'm not so sure.
Nevertheless, he nodded.
I'll make sure I won't make the same mistake twice.
I won't leave you behind again.
Also, be more careful about checking for injuries.
He rolled his eyes. You don't need to preach. I got the point the first time.
Did you?
I think we might need to practice. Talion shrugged. All right. I'll let you teach me a few tricks sometime. Velis smirked, brushing a strand of blonde hair out of her eyes.
I'll hold you to that.
Chapter 13 Jonan 3 Silk. The Sight Sorcerer felt naked in his visibility, but occasionally it proved necessary to go to a public area without concealing his location. As he glanced at the tavern patrons, he felt a weight at the back of his mind, a pressing need to remove himself from the situation. He resisted the urge. He had business to attend to. Jonan approached the bar, finding an empty spot and leaning up against it, attempting to look natural. After a pair of painful minutes of waiting, one of the two bartenders approached. He was a younger man, even by Jonan's standards, more than likely too young to even drink the stock.
What can I get you? The boy offered a grin. Rum, maybe? You look like you could use something with a kick.
He shook his head fervently.
No, thank you. Although you might not be wrong.
I'm here to meet someone. A young lady who enjoys the sharp wine.
Oh, I get you. Give me a moment and I'll show you the way.
A moment turned into several more nervous minutes until the boy finally returned and gave him a wordless gesture to follow. Jonan was more than eager to comply. He had felt the weight of several looks while he had been waiting. The worst of them was from a perpetually grinning man with white hair who sat seemingly alone at a table, a game board of some kind in front of him. The boy bartender led him to a back room, knocked on the door twice, and then turned the knob. The room beyond was no simple storage area.
It was a lavishly decorated chamber, like one might have expected in a wealthy noble's home, with embroidered red carpeting and a single table in the center decorated with candles to provide illumination. Several paintings graced the walls, and Jonan realized with discomfort that he was almost certain that most of them depicted the Vaykes Eara in varying stages of her life. The young woman that sat at one of the two chairs adjacent to the table bore a close enough resemblance to some of the paintings that she might have been mistaken for the subject herself, but Jonan knew Eara well enough to spot subtler differences. The seated woman was several inches taller than the legendary Lady of Thieves, and although she was relatively slim, her musculature was far better defined than Eara's. Her blonde hair showed hints of black at the roots, implying that her hair had been bleached and dyed. This was not Symphony herself, but the apprentice made a passable fabrication. Few survived having the level of personal contact with Eara to be able to account for the minor differences. Jonan shut the door behind him and spoke first. "Loyalty is like a crystal sword."
"Really? The same one I used last time?"
The faux Symphony sighed theatrically, which echoed around the room in a hint of effortless sound sorcery, and shook her head.
"Sharp and beautiful, but easily shattered. You going to sit?"
He smirked and approached, taking the opposite chair. She had incidentally confirmed not only the code, but her own identity.
That phrase is inane, but it did serve a useful purpose.
He never used it elsewhere, meaning that the woman was the same person who had met him on the rooftop, or someone who had been privy to their conversation. The latter was significantly less likely, given how severely Eara would punish giving that kind of information to anyone outside of her inner circle.
"Silk. Her resemblance to her master must be intentional. Perhaps it's an element of Eara's narcissism, but I suspect it's more likely the image is tailored to cultivate a reaction, a reminder of a connection with one of the most dangerous people in the world. Or, for those who aren't familiar with Eara's exact appearance, it might be sufficient to play at being Symphony herself."
There was a nagging sense of familiarity about the woman, something that might have gone beyond the resemblance to their mutual contact, but he couldn't quite place it. The last time he thought he had seen her, she had worn heavy veils like Symphony herself was renowned for. Had he seen her prior to that, or since? He took note of the pair of glasses of wine on the table as he approached and sat. "I didn't think anyone took the sharp wine thing literally." She plucked her own glass from the table with two fingers, a sign of dexterity that Jonan himself lacked, and sipped from it.
"I enjoy occasional indulgences in both puns and drinks."
She took another sip.
"What about you?"
He picked up the glass with significantly less elegance than she had demonstrated, took a dubious sniff. It didn't smell like poison, not that such a test was in any way reliable, and sipped it. "Huh, that is sharp wine." The scribe swallowed the drink with a grimace. Silk raised her gloved left hand to her face, chuckling lightly.
"Not to your taste. I suppose I could offer you something sweeter."
She reached into a pouch on her left hip, drawing Jonan's attention to her outfit. Silk was wearing a long, nondescript gray skirt and matching long-sleeved top. Her belt had a large brown pouch on the left side and a simple sheathed dagger on the right. He could faintly make out the outlines of objects inside the sleeves, pressed against her forearms, most likely a thinner variety of daggers. He had tried the same thing himself, but he had a difficult time drawing them quickly enough, even from specially tailored garb with sleeves sewn in for the weaponry. Her gloves were a hint darker than the rest of her outfit, and on the way over to the table, he had caught sight of her knee-length black boots, which likely contained more concealed weapons. He resisted the urge to flinch when she drew something out of the pouch. It wasn't another weapon, just a red apple, which he realized as she turned it over in her hand, she was peeling with a half-exposed knife that now jutted out of her sleeve. He hadn't seen her make the gesture necessary to expose the blade, which was somewhat impressive given his own experience at sleight of hand. Show off. but he wouldn't complain. He liked apples. They were fantastic.
I'd love some of that, actually. And some information.
Her expression briefly twisted into a mock pout, and she flicked her fingers. He caught the apple quarter in mid-air, taking a bite from it. That, at least, solicited a grin in response.
Next time you invite a girl out to dinner, the least you could do is give her a few minutes of polite banter before you get into business. But I'll bite.
She bit into another quarter of the apple, balancing the remaining half of the fruit on the table.
What do you need?
This part was always awkward.
Well, there's been a murder.
Silk took another bite from her apple, producing an audible crunch.
And this concerns us how?
The victim was Edric Theus's son. Crunch.
Still not seeing the concern.
Jonan took a small bite of his own apple slice. Did you kill him? The athletic woman tilted her head to the side.
No.
He nodded. He's a pretty high-profile figure. Not many people would have the necessary resources. People will be investigating our end eventually. I figured it better that I check in advance in case I need to do some sweeping for you.
Appreciate the concern.
She finished her quarter, picking up the half-apple that was still on the table.
Was that all?
Jonan shook his head. If it wasn't you, it could still be someone else from the guild.
I doubt it.
She picked up her glass of wine with two fingers of her offhand, shaking it in the air, causing the liquid to swish around inside.
I might have ordered the sharp wine, but the reality is that the guild rarely takes on that kind of business these days. I never do it personally. Risk isn't worth the reward. You'd be better off looking at your own people, I suspect.
My own people? Who does she think I work for, exactly? She was probably talking about the Thorngard, the military branch of the priesthood of Valian. That implied that she wasn't Thorngard, which he found somewhat surprising. Silk was definitely the title of Symphony's personal apprentice. He had heard that name thrown around for years, and Symphony was Valraya's guild name for the Vaekess Eara. Symphony was, at least as far as he was aware, the most famous member of the guild. That was how she had developed her reputation as the Lady of Thieves. There were conflicting reports about whether or not she was also the master of the guild, which was consistent with the conflicting reports about just about everything else concerning Eara. Jonan was an S, meaning he had a guild name starting with the letter S, indicating he was in Symphony's personal employ. He was not, however, a member of any thieves' guild, although he had worked with them on several occasions. His assignments typically came from Eara directly, although he was occasionally loaned out to other senior Vaekess or high-ranking members of the Thorngard. He had worked with members of the Thieves' Guild before, but he had assumed that Silk was like him. Closer to the Thorngard side than the guild side of Eara's business. Now it sounded more like Silk was exclusively a guild agent. In fact, upon reflection, he had never heard Silk refer to Symphony as Eara. Thorngard and other Vaekess almost always used the personal name, and guild agents generally called her Symphony. Jonan had met some guild members who weren't even aware that Symphony was the Lady of Thieves. It was nonsensical that her apprentice might be one of them, but he decided to tread carefully in this conversation, just in case. Maybe Eara keeps us working on one side or the other to prevent any one person from getting access to too much information. An apprentice with the intimate knowledge of both guild activities and Thorngard resources could be a liability if she was ever captured or persuaded to adjust her loyalties.
Yes, he replied simply after a long pause. I think I'll do that.
He scratched at his chin, debating a risk.
Have you heard of a man named Cassius Morn?
The young woman turned her head upward for a moment, giving an impression that she was considering, and then shook her head.
Doesn't sound familiar. Why do you ask?
Jonan pressed his lips together, contemplating. Giving her too much information could make her a liability. On the other hand, if there's a rogue Thorngard agent in the city, she could potentially be a target.
He's dangerous. Former Thorngard. Weapons expert. I don't think he's involved, but he might be. I wouldn't let him sneak up on you.
Silk took another sip of her wine, set it down, and tossed the apple into the air. Before it landed, the fruit had been bisected again, and an apple quarter landed in front of him. Jonan picked it up, inspecting the perfect symmetry of the cut. Definitely a show-off.
Your concern is touching, but this can't be all you called me here for,
the young woman pried in a teasing tone. Jonan finished the first quarter of the apple he had been offered and took a bite of the second, thinking while he chewed. Assuming I find that no one related to our various organizations was responsible, do you have any guesses as to where else I should look? The apprentice raised a finger to her lips, raising her eyes in a thoughtful expression.
You've checked with Hardigan, I assume?
Someone is looking into that angle.
All right. What about Taran?
She lifted her remaining quarter of the apple, slashed it again, and took a bite out of one of the resulting eighths.
Jonan blinked.
The third of the so-called immortal sorcerers, famous for finding secret ways of extending their lifespans, Eric Taran, was best known for his texts on history and sorcerous theory. He had been a battle mage many years before, however, and had been instrumental in the war against Zixis, along with the other two immortals, Blake Hardigan and Edric Theus. The man had such a mild-mannered reputation that Jonan hadn't even given him serious consideration as a murder suspect, but he clearly had known Edric for decades. There was plenty of time to accrue a reason for a personal vendetta, and Eric was best known for travel sorcery, the form of sorcery used for both teleportation and summoning. Lydia had found evidence of a planar gateway which required that exact form of sorcery to be used.
Resh, I didn't even think about him.
Huh, that's a possibility, I suppose. Silk gave him a quizzical look.
I was joking. The man must be 200 years old.
Jonan waved a hand dismissively. Sure, but he certainly has resources. And Symphony isn't exactly the only legend with apprentices.
Okay.
She ate the last piece of her side of the apple.
While we're entertaining the idea of geriatric assassins, have you thought about any of the older Rethri sorcerers? Borenthal? Or Tetherial, maybe?
He nodded. Yeah, they're on my list of people to look into. I'm planning to check Edric's own family and guards as well.
Not a bad idea. I hear his daughter is nearly as powerful as he is, and you know how siblings are.
I don't generally associate siblings with murdering each other, but that's a pretty good lead. I hadn't heard that the sister, Nakane, I think her name was, had a reputation for being all that powerful herself. Interesting. Any idea on what the daughter specializes in? Silk shook her head.
No, but I could probably find out.
He lifted both hands in a sign of non-intervention. Not worth the time. I'm sure you have other work.
You aren't kidding. I can always make time for a dinner with a charming fellow such as yourself, however. And by always, I mean up to once or twice per month.
He scratched at his chin. Is she flirting with me? I'll be sure to contact you again soon. Is there anything I can offer you in return for your help?
Something a little less boring than my current assignment would be nice.
She gave a frown.
But you already mentioned that Symphony didn't send me any new orders. A shame.
She paused, considering.
Why all the interest in this murder? It can't have been why you were sent here in the first place, otherwise you would have asked me about it last time.
Probably best to be honest about this one, or honest-ish, at least. A friend asked me to look into it, and if you were the killer, I didn't want an investigation stumbling onto you if I could deflect it in another direction. She raised a hand over her chest and put on an expression of innocence, which might have looked a little more sincere if she didn't still have an apple-stained dagger jutting out of the same sleeve.
You'd go to that much effort to protect me? I suppose I owe you my eternal gratitude.
Or something. Jonan smirked. Truly my heroism knows no bounds.
Truly. Well, my stealthy hero scribe, if there's nothing further, I have business to attend to.
She tossed back the last of her wine, offering him a scintillating grin. He finished the last of his apples, standing up. I suppose I have no further excuses to prolong the conversation. It's been a pleasure, though.
Oh, believe me, Jonan. The pleasure has been all mine.
Chapter 14 Velis, 5 Winning is winning. Velis stood in formation with the remainder of her platoon. Of the original 12, only 7 remained. Landon, Talion, Asphodel, Teshvol, Kolask, and a quiet water sorcerer named Eridus, and herself. The other platoons had diminished as well, some more than others. Of the 49 candidates that had stood with them on the field a month before, she counted a total of 30 now. It was barely an hour past the rising of the dawn fire, but the air was already warm with a summer breeze. She heard a few yawns from nearby cadets and privately wondered if they were being penalized in their scores for their lack of discipline. As with their last large gathering, the 3 officers in charge of the tests stood before them. Colonel Windham had a large ornate box on the dirt in front of her. Lieutenant Torrent stood off to the side, along with 3 other officers she didn't recognize, presumably the overseers for the other 3 platoons. Velis braced herself for a speech. She got one a few minutes later.
"Candidates," Colonel Windham began, "you have done well to make it this far. We had close to 500 applicants this year, nearly a record. Each of you shows great promise, and I am confident that many of you will eventually be groomed into fine paladins, regardless of your results in this year's tests. With the first tests, we have separated you from the average candidates. With the following tests, we will separate good candidates from the exceptional."
Velis barely resisted the urge to scratch an itch at the back of her head. She tensed her jaw, continuing to listen.
"Your next test will begin as soon as I complete my explanation. When the test begins, each of you will be given a single sigil representing one of the deities of the Taos Pantheon by the lieutenant who oversees your platoon. Your goal will be to secure at least one additional sigil within the next 12 hours. 2 of these pins will be the minimum requirement to pass on to the next stage of testing. You may pin any sigils in your possession to your uniforms and wear them for the duration of the test. You will also be evaluated based on the specific symbols you collect. Obtaining a symbol may affect your eligibility to join a specific order at the discretion of that order's arbiter."
She paused, gesturing for the platoon lieutenants to step forward. As the lieutenants approached, Colonel Windham retrieved a key from a pouch on her side and twisted it in the lock on the ornate chest. Each of the lieutenants retrieved a single box from within the chest, after which the final platoon lieutenant pushed the box shut. Afterward, each of the lieutenants took up a position standing nearby, holding the smaller boxes in their hands.
"Not too far apart," Velis considered. "About 10 feet from each other."
Colonel Windham nodded in the direction of one of the lieutenants, a tall man next to Platoon 1, and then resumed her speech.
"Your score will be based on the number of sigils you collect. Lieutenant Morris, Second Lieutenant Banks, and I will each have 7 additional sigils to distribute throughout the day. We will each have different methods of choosing who we assign these sigils to. I have scheduled a brief meeting with each of the applicants to determine who I will choose. Your meeting times are on the nearby assignment board. Attending the meeting is optional, but I would advise against missing any chance to earn a sigil. Lieutenant Morris, do you have anything to say?"
The Paladin of Lissari nodded and stepped forward.
"Yes, ma'am. I will be holding a contest at 12 bells to determine who will earn the 7 sigils you gave me. The details of the contest have also been pinned on the assignment board."
"Very good." Colonel Windham turned to Lieutenant Banks. "And you, Lieutenant Banks?"
"Yes, ma'am."
Lieutenant Banks turned toward the cadets, her silvery armor shining in the dawnfire's rising light.
"I believe the best equipped to judge your capabilities are your own platoon lieutenants. As such, I have distributed 1 of my 7 pins to each of the platoon lieutenants. The remaining 3 pins have been headed at sacred sites to the paladins of Taos throughout the city. See me any time after this announcement, and I will present you with clues to the 3 locations.
she turned back to the colonel.
That is all, ma'am.
Excellent. In that case, my speech is concluded. Cadets, you are dismissed. You may now form lines to retrieve your platoon's sigils.
The cadets turned toward where their lieutenants were already opening their boxes, displaying 7 intricately carved metal pins in the designs of the runes of their gods. Velis had seen similar pins before. Paladins frequently wore them with their dress uniforms to represent the specific order they belonged to. Under normal circumstances, the pins were unnecessary. Field uniforms were embroidered with the symbols of the individual orders, and members who wore armor were assigned a tabard with the same symbol. Velis was in the middle of her line, behind Asphodel, Talion, and Kolask. She couldn't quite see over everyone's shoulders, but she quickly guessed that Asphodel would take the Cytirin pin, and Talion would take the one corresponding to Aendarin. She wasn't so certain about Kolask. Kolask snatched a pin and hastily withdrew, leaving room for Velis to step forward. She paused, saluted Lieutenant Torrent properly, and observed the remaining pins.
Eritar, Lissari, Xeracillus, and Aendarin?
She glanced at Talion, who was already fastening a pin to his uniform and walking away. Shaking her head, she picked up the Aendarin pin, nodded to Lieutenant Torrent, and stepped away from the line. And immediately thereafter, she turned toward the ornate chest on the ground.
Surge!
The blast of motion pushed her to the chest in an instant, and while Colonel Wyndham turned toward her, Velis pushed open the lid of the box.
There was nothing left inside.
The colonel laughed softly.
That was nicely done, Applicant Jaldan. I applaud your initiative, but we wouldn't make things quite that easy for you.
Well, at least I got a chuckle out of her. That makes things slightly less embarrassing.
Velis saluted the colonel.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
No need for that at the moment. You had the right idea. Use every instant you have.
Velis lowered her hand and nodded.
That's advice I'm happy to take.
She spun around, looking at the platoon lieutenants. None of them had quite finished handing out their pins yet.
Tempting. But the long-term consequences of grabbing pins from one of the platoon batches wouldn't be worth it. I'll find another way.
She fastened her Aendarin pin onto her tunic and walked to meet with Talion. He was sitting on a large stone when she approached, scratching at his chin with an expression of concentration.
Should I expect my pin to come flying off at any moment?
Velis tapped her pin meaningfully.
Hmm?
Talion looked up, seeming to notice her for the first time. As he turned, she caught sight of the glittering symbol of Lysandri on his uniform.
Oh, no. I didn't magnetize them this time. Sabotaging my own platoon would be pretty low. Winning is winning, Sal. But you're cute when you try to be so honorable.
Of course, I was just teasing. Still, with that expression, you're clearly thinking up one of your crazy ideas.
He nodded, but his expression remained neutral.
More just debating if I should use the idea I already have. Another morally dubious one?
He shook his head.
No, just risky and somewhat impractical. Sounds like you. Let me in on it?
The swordsman frowned, folding his arms.
I don't think I can with this one. I don't want you to be complicit if something goes wrong.
Besides, I won't exactly need help if I decide to do it. Thanks for the offer, though.
It wasn't an offer as much as a request, but fine. Be that way.
She rolled her eyes.
Meet back here about 10 minutes before the day is over, though, yeah?
He nodded. I can do that. And I'll be around if you need me. If I go with this idea, I'll probably be in the barracks most of the day.
Well, at least that'll let me see what he's up to. All right. I'm going to go grab Lan. Good luck, Sal.
Luck? Never put much stock in that. Hope we succeed either way, though.
Hope is just as silly as luck,
she thought. Regardless, she smiled at him. Landon was already coming her way when she headed back toward the rest of the candidates.
Hey, which one did you pick up?
He flashed the Eritar pin at her. Velis pointed at the Aendarin pin on her tunic in response. Landon quirked an eyebrow.
Wasn't Solaris in front of you?
Guess he didn't want to look like he was playing favorites. Probably wants to cut down on the rumors about his heritage.
Landon chuckled.
If someone thought I was the son of a god, I'd be more than happy to play along.
Yeah, but no one would ever make that mistake.
Hey, that was low. I'd make a great demigod. He snatched her arm. Come on, let's go look at that assignment board.
It didn't take them long to reach the board, but most of the other candidates were already crowding around it. It took several minutes to get close enough to see. Velis noted three postings that were relevant to her.
Colonel Wyndham's appointment schedule. Asphodel, 7 bells at Colonel Wyndham's office. Velis Jaldin, 8 bells at Colonel Wyndham's office. Talion, 11 bells at the training hall. Landon, 13 bells, 1 chime at the training hall.
She skimmed over the other times. Those candidates were the few she had personally invested in and expected to succeed. Next, she checked Lieutenant Morris's posting.
Lieutenant Morris's challenge, Lysandre's Arena. Location, west bank of the Tel de Mer Lake. See map for meeting spot. Time, 12 bells. Expected duration, 1 bell. Details on the challenge will be provided at the event site.
Next to the challenge posting was a city map with the location of the lake circled and a Lysandre symbol scrawled next to the meeting point. Velis had been to the lake before. It wasn't with the paladin base, but it was close by. Presumably the paladins had set up something to keep civilians away, unless dealing with civilians was part of the event. And thirdly, she noted a hastily scrawled posting.
Sterling's challenge. Gamble for sigils. Location, the perfect stranger. Time, 14 bells. Details will be provided at the tavern.
She grinned, scanning the area, but Jonathan Sterling was nowhere to be found.
Clever idea. I'm curious now, and I'll wager several other people will be too. And I'll wager that they'll wager at his game too, which will be rigged, of course. This should be fun.
It was just after 7 bells, which meant Velis had a few hours left before the first item on the board. Landon scratched at his chin.
Looks like I've got some free time. Might see if I can figure out where some of those hidden sigils are. Want to join me?
Velis shook her head.
Sounds fun, but I need to eat. Meet you later?
He nodded.
Sure. Lysari's luck.
I'm pretty sure Lysari isn't a luck goddess, but sure, why not?
You too.
She was heading toward the mess hall when she heard someone calling out from behind her.
Hey, jumping girl! Slow down, yeah?
Velis turned to find Susan Crimson behind her. Susan paused in her step, folding her hands behind her back.
You got a minute to chat?
Velis nodded.
Sure. Good. We can walk and talk. I could use some eats, too.
As the brunette moved forward to catch up, Velis scanned the former Thorngard for weapons.
Simple sword on her left hip, stiletto moderately concealed in her left sleeve. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm starved. What did you want to chat about? Saw your dummy spearing bit in the prelims. Mighty impressive, that. A group of us have been putting together a plan for passing this challenge. You've got some skills, so we thought you might want into it.
Velis turned her head toward the brunette, considering.
She doesn't talk anything like I would have expected from her file. She's a noble, isn't she? Maybe she's trying to sound more accessible to me. That doesn't really make sense, though. It's common knowledge that I'm from a high house, too. I suppose she just might have picked up the dialect while she served in the Thorngard. Gods know I don't sound much like a noble woman myself, but...
I might be interested,
Velis offered.
What's the plan? That's the tough sell, given the nature of the thing. You can't tell me until I accept. Can you tell me what skills you'd need me to use?
Susan slowed her pace and Velis slowed to compensate.
You're jumping mostly?
Susan offered.
That's the most I can tell you, I think. Pretty tempting. I could find out a lot about her capabilities, as well as her allies, by doing this.
They were getting close to the entrance to the mess hall, so Velis stopped walking entirely. Susan paused along with her.
Can you tell me when you'd be doing it?
Susan shook her head.
Sorry. Can't let you put together enough to interfere if you wanted to.
That makes sense. It's a real tempting offer, but I think I'm going to have to pass.
Susan's expression shifted from friendly to neutral, her hand moving to a pouch on her side. Velis tensed momentarily, but all Susan removed from the pouch was a pin, one representing Xeracillus.
What if I sweeten the deal a bit? Give you a pin right now.
That's a very good offer. Too good of an offer.
I'm flattered that you think so much of me that you'd offer me that kind of deal. I think I'm going to have to pass, though. I'm sorry. I just don't like signing up for things I don't have all the details about.
Susan nodded, putting the pin back away.
Thought so. But I figured I'd ask. We can still be friends, yeah?
Friends?
Yeah, sure. I'd like that. Come on, deal or not, we still need to eat.
Susan Crimson turned out to be much easier to chat with over food, especially once Velis was seated out of stiletto reach on the opposite side of a table. They had never really talked before, but Velis quickly found herself enjoying trading stories about training mishaps and difficult battles. By the end of the conversation, Velis was convinced that someone else had put Susan up to approaching her, but she couldn't sort out who without asking directly.
The Wandering War, most likely. They've been moving about together constantly since her companion failed out of the competition, and he never talks. I suppose he's taken on the role of her muscle, unless his silence means he's the puppet master type.
When they finished eating, Velis excused herself quickly, heading back to the barracks. The 40-odd minutes it had taken to eat had been more than sufficient time to formulate a plan for the next few hours, even while exchanging bits of banter with a fellow soldier.
Susan could be an asset in the future if I can figure out what her deal is. I'll have to pry more if I can get her isolated sometime. In the meantime, I need Asphodel.
With hours of time in the day that were not allocated to any specific activity, the three pins hidden somewhere in the city were obvious targets for spending time. Asphodel was the obvious solution. Velis still didn't know exactly how Asphodel's oracle abilities worked, but the purple-haired girl clearly had some kind of divination abilities, ones that she could use with minimal preparation and no obvious incantations. The former Queen's Guard suspected that Asphodel was a practitioner of assassin's sorcery, a style that typically used gestures or pure thoughts for spellcasting purposes. It was also possible that Asphodel had a completely different method of utilizing sorcery, given that she was a Dalaran and from a different culture. Learning more about Asphodel's methods could be valuable, but for the moment, she just needed Asphodel's skills. Determining where to find Asphodel was easy. The Dalaran was scheduled for a meeting with the Colonel's office an hour before Velis was. Rather than trying to catch Asphodel before she entered, Velis headed to the Citadel of Blades just after 7 bells, waiting to catch the crystal-haired girl on her way out. That would also give Velis an idea of how long Asphodel's meeting with the Colonel lasted. The meetings were scheduled a half hour apart from each other, but that didn't mean they lasted for a full half hour each. Knowing the duration of the meeting would give Velis an idea of how she should prepare herself. Asphodel emerged from the office about 10 minutes after 7 bells. Wordlessly, she extended an open palm toward Velis as she approached. A sigil of Cytira was in her hand.
Not bad. You've already got enough to pass, then.
Velis gave the Dalaran an approving nod.
It is yours.
Velis blinked. She had assumed Asphodel had simply been displaying the pin, not offering it as a gift. Gingerly, she plucked the sigil from the other woman's hand, noting that Asphodel's fingernails matched the color of her hair.
But they're just normal nails, not claws like the legends talk about. I suppose that's a transformation she'd have to undergo, not something the Dalaran have at birth.
Thank you, Velis said, closing her hand protectively around the sigil.
She frowned. She'd never done anything of significance to help Asphodel. Certainly nothing to warrant this degree of kindness.
Why?
You will need it more than I will.
Velis tilted her head to the side.
Not to complain about a present, but I'd really like to understand how you know that. What exactly are these oracle abilities of yours?
Asphodel frowned, looking from side to side.
Can't talk right now. Too much noise. I will tell you eventually. Goodbye.
She turned away and abruptly began walking off.
Wait! I was going to ask you—
Asphodel half-turned to face her, slowing her steps.
You wanted to offer to use motion sorcery to make me run faster, allowing me to quickly go and obtain all of the sigils that are hidden in the city. That won't be necessary. I can retrieve 2 of them without your help, and the 3rd is already gone. Thank you, though.
I am glad you wish to work with me.
The Dalaran smiled softly and turned away, retreating from the citadel. Velis took a breath to speak again, but her voice never came.
You're here early,
Jonathan Sterling remarked, approaching the colonel's office. His meeting was scheduled for right after Asphodel's, and thus, just